Speaking of laws, I know somebody that knows about those particular laws is our prosecutor, Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry. Mr. Prosecutor, welcome.
Hello, Amos.
And I was correct that we already have laws on the books about aggressive panhandling.
Actually, it's a statute.
Oh, it's a statute.
It is a aggressive panhandling is actually a crime. Mm-hmm. I don't know what level. Obviously, it's not a very serious crime.
But it's still a crime.
But it is a crime, yes.
Yeah, because as you were coming in, the caller was concerned not about passive panhandling, but she was concerned about the ones that come up to you in the drive-thru at the bank, the ones that come up to you at the fast food, the ones that kind of want to lean in the car. And she had called the non-emergency number of IMPD, but they're overwhelmed right now. I mean, they're busy with all the real serious stuff.
That's correct. And actually, the aggressive panhandling is cited from time to time, and by that I mean individuals have been cited for that, and we've even had not very many, but there's actually been a couple of prosecutions of individuals who are clearly lying about their circumstances and asking for money, and prosecute those individuals for theft and attempted theft.
But he's not here for panhandling. He is here because this Saturday at Butler University in the Atherton Union, 704 West Hampton Drive is End Bullying Now! Prosecutor said, we're going to end this. And it is a bully prevention forum hosted by the prosecutor's office. What y'all going to be doing Saturday?
Well, we've got a number of speakers, including State Representative Greg Porter, who authored the legislation that passed in the most recent legislature, calling on the Department of Education to formulate guidelines for schools in terms of prevention of bullying and reporting of bullying. Dr. Dennis Kinder is from Children Resource Group. Mm-hmm. And Dr. Brandy Oliver is from Butler. Those individuals will be talking about how to number one, in terms of the emotional impact of bullying. Our deputy prosecutors will be there presenting actually the inaugural presentation of a new CyberSafe presentation that we put together aimed at parents. Hmm. We've had a program for years since mid-2011 called CyberSafe, right, which is targeted to 5th to 8th grade students. That's been presented now to almost 10,000 students here in Marion County. It's a great program. Talks about the legal implications of misuse of social media. Because we've just sort of almost universally gotten feedback from school personnel about the program that, yeah, it's a great program, but you also need one aimed to the parents. We've created a corollary program that, again, will roll out this Saturday that will be available for parents and school personnel.
What should parents do in terms of social media besides know where, if their kids are on Twitter, if they're on Facebook, what's the new thing? If they're on Instagram, some of this other stuff, to know it and figure out how to get on there and find out what they're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of just limiting their access in terms of the home computer, their smartphones, that sort of thing. As I've said repeatedly in talking about the new program that we're rolling out, the CyberSafe directed to parents. I don't care how savvy you think you are, your kids know things you don't know. And so, you know, step number one is educating yourself about the range of types of activity that are out there.
Isn't there also a new liability? Because, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe the legislature cracked down and added intimidation through cyberspace as part of intimidation, because right now I could intimidate you illegally by voice. I could write you something and intimidate somebody in writing. But now if the intimidation occurs on Facebook, if the intimidation occurs on Twitter, if it occurs on these other electronic networks or even in regular email, that could now be a crime under Indiana law.
Yeah, and I am I'm not 100% certain that there was any additional provisions. I think it's clearly the case that sort of conduct could fall under the crime of intimidation in any event, mm-hmm. as the core crime consists. And that's one of the things that we'll talk about in the forum this week, as well as in the CyberSafe presentations. I mean, there's an entire range of potential criminal implications of that sort of conduct, harassment, intimidation, stalking. Right. There's a number of potential areas where it can cross the line into criminal conduct.
239-1310, 239-1310 with Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry. What is one other thing on bullying? What's being done to educate school administrators, school systems, both the traditional school systems as well as the charter schools and the private schools, on how to identify and really start to deal with this?
Well, I think each school clearly, you know, to one degree or another, have their own individual programs and address it to one degree or another. What the new legislation that was Representative Porter's bill requires is, number one, starting at the state level, the Department of Education is required to formulate guidelines and protocols to share with the schools. The schools, in turn, are required to implement those procedures in terms of, again, putting in place school safety procedures, prevention of bullying procedures, as well as detection and then reporting, and calling on the schools, requiring the schools to actually include instances of bullying in their annual reports.
239-1310, 239-1310. This afternoon's name is the Marion County Prosecutor is here. We got to remind you, he cannot comment on any cases that are active or cases on appeal. Because, you know, because if I get in trouble with the Chief Justice, he's going to try to make me do pro bono work. 239-1310. 239-1310. Afternoon's name is. I got to ask you, Mr. Prosecutor, as it relates to the new second chance law, Representative McMillan was here last week, as well as Senator Taylor and a panel, and we walked the community through this new law, and I think it's dawning on people that this covers virtually every offense that exists on the books, except for offenses that take a life, offenses that involve the sexual exploitation of children, and all sex offenses. And human trafficking. And there's a couple of provisions in the law where the county prosecutor has the opportunity to weigh in positively and negatively. What is going to be the position of your office as these petitions start to move through?
Well, first of all, just to sort of back up, we have supported, you know, our office has supported the concept of second chance, mm-hmm. no question about it, in terms of the legislation going forward. We have always had in place, since we've taken office, a procedure where we evaluate motions to modify sentences, which is something different than obviously the expungement, but we evaluate those on a case-by-case basis and pretty regularly agree to modifications, which you have to do. Mm-hmm. To answer your question, I'm actually pretty proud of the fact that through our office, and particularly Andy Fogle in our office, we've taken the lead in terms of analyzing the legislation, putting together the forms that are to be utilized. One thing that individuals clearly need to understand is you got one shot at this, mm-hmm. and so you need to make sure you do it right the first time, which probably means you should consult with an attorney before you try and do it. And so, again, we've kind of taken the lead in terms of putting together forms and the procedures. We are actually going to employ, we're anticipating a pretty significant flood of these petitions, particularly in the first year or so. And so we're actually employing another staff person, a paralegal, full time to basically process these. And ultimately, that's all background to answer your question. We will evaluate them on a case-by-case basis, just as like we do the motions to modify, and where appropriate, we will not oppose them. Now, and as you know, under the statute, other than a couple of very discreet areas, our position ultimately is not controlling. It would still be up to the judge. And then there are some limited circumstances where the expungement can only be done by our agreement.
And that's, I think, for the most serious of the serious crimes that are not exempted.
Right. The starting point is there's, as you said, there are three categories of offenses that are just not eligible to begin with. Mm-hmm. Then there are other serious
offenses.
Like a
battery that you really beat someone within an inch of their life, but they live.
Right. The category of offenses that would require our agreement are, interestingly, number one, just as you said, an offense that results in serious bodily injury. But the other category is actually a public official who's been convicted of a crime related to his or her office. I'm not going to touch that one. That would require our agreement.
That's interesting.
Also.
And the other thing is I remember a lot of these procedures were literally taken from the existing expungement statute that you had to wait 10, 15 years. So this has already been a procedure where you had to do the motion, the petition. You had to get it right, and maybe the prosecutor could weigh in.
Right, but up until the last couple of legislatures where this has been addressed, it only applied to arrests in the past that did not result in convictions.
What is going to be the position of your office? Because there are a couple of instances in the new Second Chance law where a person could reach out to their county prosecutor and say, all right, I may be 2 to 3 years before the maximum, but based upon the case, based upon I've got a clean record, would you consider, weighing in? What's going to be your position? Is it going to be a case by case?
Yeah, absolutely. And what you're saying there is there are certain time frames, depending on the nature of the offense, that needs to expire before they can file a petition. But you're exactly right that there is also provisions that with our agreement, the person with the felony could seek the expungement during an earlier time frame, and if we receive those requests, again, we'll look at them on a case by case basis. I assure you, we do it fairly, and as I said, unlike in the past where prior administrations automatically denied motions to modify, we actually very seriously consider every single one. We have a committee that reviews it. I make the ultimate decision, and we pretty regularly agree to those where an individual has clearly shown that they've gotten over the mistake they made and gotten headed in the right direction.
Let me ask a budgeting question. It's fair to say that when you built your budget, you assumed that maybe we'd have roughly the same number of capital cases that your office might have to try in the next couple of years that has been the previous couple of years, because we had not had a huge spike in the number of homicides. We have a huge spike in the number of homicides this year, which means there's going to be a spike in the number of solved homicides and the number of homicide cases that come before your office. Are we possibly going to see a fiscal problem in terms of having the dollars you need to try the cases you need to protect the safety of this county with the new mayor has all the power and the city can, the city controller thinks he has all the power law?
Certainly, we would hope not. I guess that is a possibility. I mean, to the extent that we really the only homicide cases where we have extraordinary expenses of any significance would be if it were a capital case.
Somebody got a case right now in Fort Wayne.
Right. Mm-hmm. If it were a life without parole sort of case, that doesn't add any additional expense. And so, given where we are in a budget situation, my guess would be that we're going to end up with our fundamental budget. Be my guess. I mean, that's going to be the reality. And that if there's a time where we need extraordinary cost, that we would just have to petition the council for that appropriation on a case-by-case basis.
Are you worried that after the council meeting last night where this homestead credit was defeated in a bipartisan vote, the mayor's office this morning and last night was making noises about sharp cuts coming? Are you worried about that, or that's going to be more the city side?
No, I am absolutely worried about it across the board. Whether it's county side or city side. I've been like a broken record as I've appeared for neighborhood associations in the last 6 months, and that is we have to find a way to fund public safety. As I said at NORA about a week and a half ago, community meeting, I think the police chief and our public safety director exercised great restraint in terms of sending the message that and they're obviously have some political considerations, but our police department's at crisis mode at this point, in light of the continuing bickering between the mayor and the council over how we fund these things, someone's going to have to take the lead.
All right, 239-1310. 239-1310's afternoon names. We'll take a break. Take your calls with Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry. All that and more after these. We're with Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry to the phones and anonymous. Hi there.
Amos.
Hi there.
Hey, question.
Yeah.
Got a number for you. $6 million.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to see it. It has nothing to do with the city of Indianapolis and the state of Indiana. If they want it, have them build it themselves. Some stupid, ignorant cricket field. Okay?
I
don't care about no cricket.
But
they can't keep the grass cut on the park for the kids to play baseball. They can't keep the hoops in the park for the kids to play basketball. I don't care about some, and I'm not racist by any means,
mm-hmm.
but I don't care about some foreigner that wants a cricket field in Indianapolis. If they want it, go pay for it. Don't use my tax money to put some stupid cricket field in the city of Indianapolis. We don't have enough money to pay for the parks we got right now. The police department, the fire department, all of that.
All right,
I'm with you when you're right. But it's not just cricket, it's Gaelic football and hurling as well. I'm kidding. I'm with you 100%.
Gaelic?
It's outrageous.
That's money that could hire a deputy prosecutor, put more, you know, officers on the street, and I would sacrifice 5 new bike lanes for 1 or 2 officers that are out here in the community, not only taking care of business of the crime, but working with community. I appreciate it. Let me go to Brenda right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. How are you doing?
I'm fine.
Good evening to the prosecutor.
Hi, Brenda.
How you doing, sir?
Good.
On August the 3rd, Mr. Prosecutor, you'll be having a bullying forum at Butler University.
Yes, ma'am.
But I want to go in a different direction, if I may. It's not just student on student. There's a lot of racial harassment, racial bullying, disability bullying by educators. And I really would like for you to set up some type of ombudsman's office to where parents can come to you to upgrade the responsibilities of the Department of Child Services to let us file education neglect charges against these school systems who are violating the federal rights of our children with disabilities. That's one issue that I want to bring forward. And then today in today's newspaper, this whole thing with Bennett, prosecutor, will you be probing the Department of Education for white-collar crime?
Well, based on the reports that have occurred, as to that specific subject, I mean, there's certainly nothing that appears to be criminal. I certainly would think it'd be appropriate for the Indiana Inspector General, which monitors ethical conduct on behalf of state agencies, to take a look at that situation. In terms of, you know, any ongoing investigation white collar crime, we have a very active white collar crime unit, and we'll certainly look at any criminal conduct by any governmental agency.
We also, Mr. Prosecutor, don't.
Oh, and I'm sorry if I could.
Yeah.
In terms of your original point, Brenda, about an ombudsman. I don't know that it's necessary to create a separate position. I mean, if you or anyone else, any citizen, feels that a school personnel is engaged in illegal or criminal conduct toward a child, certainly bring that to the attention of our office, and we'll look at it.
Can I ask you one other question?
Real quick.
On the issue dealing with our young people with these plea bargains, I don't know what the constitutionality of these plea bargains when you got young people so young who are taking plea bargains that may be afraid to say no and just stand on the principle. If they didn't do a crime, then why do the time? You know, I'm just hearing this, you know, which is going in our community with our young people. And one last thing, prosecutor, I really like for you to look at this whole school to prison pipeline. There's some criminal activity going on in our school district and also the State Department of Education. They refuse to address some issues that I brought to them. This is the third administration, the third, where the Pike Township School District falsified a special education consent form that I signed. And I can't get the first administration, which was Sue Ellen Reed, wouldn't do nothing, Bennett's office, and now I'm trying to get Glenda Ritz's office to help me sort through this issue, and they've just decided that they brushed me off. No, I'm not going to be brushed off. I need your help.
Yeah, well, in terms of the educational issue, I don't know that we can directly affect that. Going back to your original point about, you know, people taking plea bargains, certainly we do not want, and my office does not want someone to admitting something to do. The court does not want to accept a plea if, in fact, the person has not done it. And so it clearly at the juvenile level, the juvenile has the ability to have the input of both the parent and counsel. In the adult setting, they have the ability to have counsel, and certainly I would not think any competent counsel would be advising someone to admit to something they didn't do.
And so parents should understand that when your deputy prosecutors go to a defendant, whether it's a juvenile defendant and the parent is there present in their counsel, or it's an adult defendant and the prosecutor's talking to the defendant and to their counsel and say, hey, you ought to take this plea, the defendant has the right to say no.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And they can say no at any, they can say yes to your prosecutor and then flip and say no when they're in front of the judge.
Correct. And on occasion, it doesn't happen, regularly, but certainly on occasion when a defendant goes before a court and says, well, I really didn't do this, but I just want to get it over with, the court will not accept that plea.
And the other thing is people, since we don't have cameras and microphones in Indiana courtrooms, and that's not a good scene on Law and Order, nobody really hears the questions that are asked during the plea part of a plea bargain where the judge goes through a number of questions and specifically asks the defendant, is this what you want to do? It's like three or four or five times, is this what you want to do?
Absolutely. Our deputy prosecutor would recite the factual basis for the plea and among the other questions and advising the defendant of its whole range of rights, would ask the defendant whether the factual basis recited was true or not. And certainly again, our office does not want to take a plea from someone if they in fact take the position they didn't do it.
239-1310 is afternoon's name. A couple of the things as we look at fighting in what you have to do is the caseload, because the community is hearing crime is up. Is the caseload up, and if so, how much?
Well, it's in different areas. I don't know that it's necessarily up a lot. It's just heavy caseload. Our strike team, which handles drugs, gangs, and guns, has a very significant caseload. Our domestic violence unit has huge, huge caseloads. Mm-hmm. Certainly in the misdemeanor court, there's a huge volume of cases go through there. Our major felony prosecutors might have a caseload anywhere from 30 to 50 active cases. So, number one, we have heavy caseloads, and so my concern would be that if we continue to suggest that we've got to cut our budget, we're very quickly going to be in a really bad position as well.
All right, our last caller with Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry, Brother Jabu. Hi there.
Amos, how you doing?
I'm fine. Running short of time. What's up?
No problem. What I would like for you to do is just to share the email that I sent to you with the prosecutor, and I won't go into that because I know that you're pressing, but the other thing that I wanted to press is I have evidence that there is fraud that has been committed by a federal agency, and I'm wondering who within the prosecutor's office I would speak to about that.
Well, if it is a federal agency, then my belief would be in the first line of resort would be with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of Indiana.
The U.S. Attorney's Office has said that they would have to defend the agency, so I would need to talk to you.
Well, they would only defend the agency if it were a civil action. They do not defend the agency if there has been criminal conduct. If there is a lawsuit, yes, then...
Well, they're telling me something different.
So you have criminal evidence, or this is a criminal matter? Then it probably would go to Washington.
No, I mean all of those are in the same hierarchy. But in talking to a prosecutor or one of your cohorts in your office that was on your show, Amos, he said that your office I talk to in order to move this situation forward?
What's a good government hotline number? Hold on, we're getting the phone. Yeah, I'm getting the phone number.
You're going to figure out the phone number. While you're doing there, one of the questions he asked, Mr. Prosecutor, is the now famous utterance of the former public safety director of the city, Frank Straub, who said after the 2010 Expo shooting, we have the shooter, we have him on tape. Everybody's been looking for the tape. Nobody has found it. Can we fair to say the tape does not exist?
Here's what I know about that subject, which is obviously that occurred before we took office. And when, among others, Reverend Ajabu was inquired about it, my staff, including the deputy prosecutors who handled the case against Seamus Patton, said there is no such video showing the shooter on tape. And so whatever former director Straub said or didn't say, I can only tell you what I've been told, and I have no reason to doubt them.
Never existed.
I think they're sounding like never existed.
That's my understanding.
Oh, Lord, help me.
You're probably going to have to fly out to Spokane and talk to the police chief of Spokane.
Well, but the mayor's office said that they had it, and they gave it to the prosecutor's office, which Curry was not in office at that time. That was Brizzy. And I got the letter that says exactly that.
Well,
are you telling me that not only that the mayor is lying, but the prosecutor has lied,
I think,
public safety director has lied,
well,
the police has lied, and we got 10 children shot downtown and one in jail? All based on a lie?
That sounds like a civil rights violation, and I would take that to the U.S. attorney. If you've got documentary evidence that something existed that doesn't exist, that involved a case and utterances of a case, that sounds like a color of law violation, and that's the feds.
That's the mayor said existed. That's a civil rights violation, but I'll follow up on that.
That's the feds.
Give me the number. Do you have the number, prosecutor?
Good Government Hotline, 327-2700. 327-2700.
Is that in your office?
Yes, sir, it is.
And who would I ask to speak to?
In the first instance, it will be a answering machine, and then someone, depending on what the... You're going to have to provide sufficient information to allow someone to determine how they call
it. I can do that. In fact, I can bring the documentation to your office and so we can get past it.
Well, in the first instance, you can report the information on that number.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And again, the bullying forum is this Saturday. You have to sign up?
Yes, sir, you do.
All right, how do people sign up?
It is absolutely free.
Free!
But to register, contact Annie Kern at our office at 327-3642. Or Annie, ANNIE.Kern, KERN, at INDY.gov.
So you can call Annie Kern at 327-3642.
Yes, or email her at that email.
At Annie.Kern. Kern, that's...
At INDY.gov.
That's KERN. At KERN at INDY.gov. Marion County Prosecutor Terry Curry, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.